Hello, and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. And it was on this day, in 1942, that the British colony of Singapore and its military base fell to Japanese forces. It was one of Britain's biggest losses during the Second World War. Rob Walker reports.
Troops had come from Britain, from Australia, and from India, all ready to give their lives in the cause of freedom. They have fought a losing battle with tremendous courage.
Britain and its allies are on the retreat in Southeast Asia. Japanese troops are advancing south down the Malay Peninsula. Their goal is the island stronghold of Singapore, home to the most important British military base in the region, and a prize the British Army and its allies have been ordered to defend at all costs.
You see, the Japanese were bombing at us in 27 planes at a time and coming from Saigon. And we were right up in the middle of them. This was something that was never considered by the Admiral, that we were sticking our nose into the tiger's mouth.
At the time, Peter Dunstan was a 19-year-old Royal Marine on the British battleship the Prince of Wales. He was part of a force steaming towards the Malayan coast to support Allied troops on shore. But it soon became clear that although the Allies had many more soldiers than the Japanese, they were dangerously short of fighter planes.
Meanwhile, gaining early command of the air, the Jap continued to bomb and fight his way south.
The first torpedo that hit the Prince of Wales hit just forward of the propeller. It ripped the guts out of the back of the Prince of Wales, and she went down about 40 degrees within about 5 minutes. We were told to abandon ship. I went down a rope that was down the side, and I just let go and dropped about 50 feet into the water. The only thing was that part of the Pacific Ocean is shark infested.
Peter Dunstan was saved by a British destroyer and taken to Singapore. But soon he was in new danger.
The tide of invasion swept forward, and in a few weeks it was lapping almost the last lines of defence on the mainland north of Singapore itself. And it was a race between the speed of the invaders' advance and the speed which the Allies could send men and weapons to stiffen the defence.
As darkness fell on February the 8th, 1942, some 30,000 Japanese troops were poised to cross the narrow straits separating Singapore Island from the Malay Peninsula. More than double that number of Allied troops were waiting for them.
Special communique issued by combined headquarters at 8:30 this morning. An enemy force in strength succeeded in landing on the western shores of Singapore last night, and they are being engaged by our troops. Fighting continues.
Within 6 hours of them landing on the northeast corner, we were in second line. Your backup troops to the front line. But then the Australians started coming through and your front line.
So the Australians pulled back?
Yeah.
And then what happened then when you were in the front line?
Well, it was just a question of fighting and having to move back and knowing that they were infiltrating. I mean, they were jungle fighters. We weren't trained in jungle fighting. But they were trained, they'd been trained, they'd fought all the way down Malaya. So you were standing here fighting them and the bugger had come around the back of you.
Outflanking.
Yeah, they were battle-hardened troops we were against. Used to fighting, used to sticking bits of stuff in their tin helmet as camouflage. And they looked like a blooming jungle tree walking along.
So they were perfectly camouflaged for the environment.
Absolutely, we had no idea of that sort of thing. The colonial people that were in charge of the British Army in Singapore and Malaysia had no great experience of close fighting. They'd been out there some years having a nice, easy life.
So they underestimated the Japanese?
Oh, absolutely.
Meanwhile, our men fought a rearguard action back to their line under a murderous enemy artillery barrage. The enemy force that succeeded in landing is considerable. The line we now hold contains them.
Suddenly, what has been unthinkable for Britain now appears a possibility. The supposedly impregnable fortress of Singapore is at risk. On the evening of February the 10th, 2 days after the Japanese landing, the British Prime Minister Winston Churchill sends a cable to the British commander in the region. There must, at this stage, he says, be no thought of saving the troops or sparing the population. The battle must be fought to the end at all costs. Commanders and senior officers should die with their troops.
Poor old Churchill said, keep fighting, but when you realise that, you know, it's an island, what is it, 40 miles by 10 miles, and the Japanese were occupying half of it, there's no way. I mean, there was no support, I mean, no battleships, there were no aircraft, there were absolutely nothing to support us. We were completely on our own.
By now, the Japanese have closed in on the city of Singapore, gaining control of the main water supplies and capturing most of the Allied ammunition stores. 1 million people have crowded into the shrinking area still held by the Allies.
One of the bombs landing in the barrack area that we were in, and one of my sergeants, I mean, he got a lump of shrapnel that went through his helmet and split open his skull. Great pal of mine, but you don't think about it. You have a job to do, you get on with it. Mortar bomb exploded from his shrapnel, missed me, missed everything, come across there. Just laid it back open.
Into your hand, hit your hand.
Yeah. And I was taken to Singapore General Hospital. It was pretty chaotic. They were burying loads of people dying, the civilians and the military.
Then, on the morning of February the 15th, the Japanese break through the final line of defence. Allied troops are running out of ammunition. And shortly after 5:15 in the afternoon, General Percival surrenders in person to the Japanese army. It's the largest surrender of British-led military personnel in history, and devastating news for Prime Minister Winston Churchill.
I speak to you all under the shadow of a heavy and far-reaching military defeat. It is a British and imperial defeat. Singapore has fallen. All the Malay Peninsula has been overrun. Other dangers gather about us out there.
I don't think there was any feeling at all that was, you know, we've done our bit and we can't do any more. We had no backup. Oh, well, we're prisoners of war, so what? We hope that within 12 months we'd be free, little knowing what the Japanese were like.
Many local civilians in Singapore who'd suffered discrimination under Britain's colonial administration would also now suffer under a harsh Japanese occupation. The Royal Marine Peter Dunstan, who'd survived the sinking of his ship, jungle fighting and shrapnel injury, a new ordeal was beginning. Working for 3.5 years, building what became known as the Death Railway, because of the number of Allied prisoners who died working on it.
I know I lost 2 of my corporals. One died of cholera, and 3 days later the second one died. Cholera was the worst thing out, and I know that Corporal Murphy and Corporal Brown, I helped to bury them. I can actually take you back and show you one of the camps, and we lost a lot of our boys there.
Japan surrendered in 1945, and a British administration returned to Singapore. But everything had changed after the military humiliation of British forces on the island. It was the beginning of the end of the British Empire in Asia. Peter Dunstan has returned frequently to the region, and today still helps families track down information about their relatives who died there.
Peter Dunstan was talking to Rob Walker for Witness. For details of our complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.